and her prophets. And today, what I want to do is actually look at someone who's not a minor prophet. Now, for those of you maybe don't know this, the prophets, the reason why they divide them and they say major and minor is not their impact and what they did. It's strictly minor because they were smaller writings, okay, just smaller books. And then the major ones were ones that they had a lot more extensive writing on them. So we're not dissing any of them by calling them minor prophets. But today we're going to be looking at one of the major prophets that I'm sure most of us have heard of. This guy's name was Elijah. Now Elijah, actually, the prophets, they had Judah and Israel, and the territories were split, and he was focused primarily on the northern kingdom. But Elijah was amazing in that he actually had a very interesting dynamic going on, in that he was very bold. He took his calling as one of God's prophets, as a man of God. He took it very seriously. But as with all the prophets, as we're, you know, looking and what we're seeing, they were men and women just like us. They were human. And very often we read through and we take the time to go through and look at people like the prophets. It's important that we understand that because they were human just like us, they go through similar things that we do. And it's important that we learn from their example. And I want us to do that today as we look at Elijah, because as we read about him in this one particular section we're going to look at in 1 Kings, we'll see that we've had some Elijah moments ourselves, if we're honest. That we've been just like Elijah ourselves. So we're going to look in 1 Kings here, and the title of the sermon today is Fragile Confidence. Fragile Confidence. Now, many of you know this too. I've been coaching this travel baseball team, this 16 and under baseball team. And interestingly enough, I just got a text a little while ago. They had the tournament went on today, and they had to go on without me. They lost, which was disappointing. But I joked about it because I said, well, now that they lost, I don't have to rush and try to make it to the second game. I got nothing but time. I'm not doing anything after church, but probably going to take a nap. So you guys get the long version of the sermon, not the abbreviated. So you can blame the 302 rivals if I go too long. I'm just kidding. Some of you are looking at me like, he's not serious, is he? No. The thing is, I've really been immersed in baseball because in teaching these kids technique and really helping them to understand fundamentals, they're still in a very young developmental stage, and many of them, they're growing, and so what they look like last year, they don't necessarily look like this year. Because, you know, when you're 14 and you go to 15 or 15 to 16, some of them, they've grown 4 inches, or, you know, suddenly they got facial hair and big shoulders. Like, they're changing. And all of this baseball that I've immersed myself in, I was thinking about confidence and what it means to have confidence. I was thinking, what example could I pull from baseball that talks about confidence? Now, many of you guys probably recognize him. This guy's name is George Ruth, also known as the Babe. He was born over in, 1895? He was born in Baltimore, actually. And actually didn't live a very, like, super long life. He died, he was about 53 years old. He died fairly young. But he's a great baseball player. Held the home run record until Hank Aaron beat it back in the 70s. Stats still that haven't been broken to this day, and some of the ones that have been broken, they actually, you know, have only been recently been surpassed. And he's heralded as one of the greats, one of the great pioneers, certainly, in American baseball. And, you know, what's interesting, the kind of signature stamp, if you will, that you have about Babe Ruth is where he's known for calling his shot. This was October 1st, I think it was 1930. Said he stood there and he pointed up there right before he hit a home run to win the World Series, right? So, you know, he's known for this legendary thing. Now, this is an actual artist depiction of it. I'm sure he wasn't quite smiling like that. Well, at least, I don't know. You know, some of the stories I heard about, he might have been. This is actually what it looks like. If you can see here where this circle right there, that's him at the plate. And there are a lot of different stories and different, you know, tellings of the story. And some people say he wasn't really calling a shot. He was saying, oh, look up there. You know, there's all these different stories. But the point is that the reason why people believe this story about Babe Ruth pointing up there and calling his shot, where he's going to hit it, and then he does it, is because of his amazing confidence. See, it wasn't like, well, you know, I don't believe it because, nothing would ever indicate that. No, he was an extremely confident man. You know, people looked at him and thought, wow, you know, he was this imposing figure. And we think about ourselves in our walk with God, very often what hinders us in our relationship with God is that we don't walk like Babe Ruth comes up to the plate. We don't approach the plate with confidence. We don't go out, you know, to our jobs tomorrow, and we don't walk through our neighborhoods, not being arrogant and full of yourself or cocky, but we don't walk out there with a confidence that says, God is on my side, that God is with me, that he will protect me. God told me to do this. God instructed me. God has taught me. And so I approach my life. I approach the different situations that come my way, no matter how big or small, you know, the pressure doesn't matter because I know that God is with me. You know, we can learn from that confidence that says, you know what? I'm going to call myself. I'm going to hit a home run right now because God is with me. Is that the attitude we have? Because we think of this God who has created the entire universe and all the stars and all the many galaxies we haven't even traveled to. And we look at how God considers us so precious, just us as individuals, just little old you and me. And yet, does our faith reflect that that same God who's created everything and has always been and will always be, does our faith reflect that when he is with us, that there's nothing that can stop us. There's nothing that can stand in our way. I want to start by looking in 1 Kings chapter 18 here. Starting in verse 16, it says, so Obadiah went to meet Ahab and told him, and Ahab went to meet Elijah. When he saw Elijah, he said to him, is that you, you troubler of Israel? I have not made trouble for Israel, Elijah replied, but you and your father's family have. You have abandoned the Lord's commands and have followed the Baals. Now summon the people from all over Israel to meet me on Mount Carmel and bring the 450 prophets of Baal and the 400 prophets of Asherah who eat at Jezebel's table. So Ahab sent word throughout all Israel and assembled the prophets on Mount Carmel. Elijah went before the people and said, how long will you waver between two opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him. But if Baal is God, follow him. But the people said nothing. Then Elijah said to them, I am the only one of the Lord's prophets left, but Baal has 450 prophets. Get two bulls for us. Let Baal's prophet choose one for themselves. And let them cut it into pieces and put it on the wood, but not set fire to it. I will prepare the other bull and put it on the wood, but will not set fire to it. Then you call on the name of your God and I will call on the name of the Lord. The God who answered by fire, he is God. Then all the people said, what you say is good. Elijah said to the prophets of Baal, choose one of the bulls and prepare it first, since there are so many of you. Call on the name of your God, but do not light the fire. So they took the bull given them and prepared it. Then they called on the name of Baal, from morning till noon. Baal, answer us, they shouted. But there was no response. No one answered, and they danced around the altar they had made. At noon, Elijah began to taunt them. This is hilarious. Shout louder, he said. Surely he is God. Perhaps he is in deep thought or busy or traveling. Maybe he's sleeping and must be awakened. So they shouted louder and slashed themselves with swords and spears, as was their custom, until their blood flowed. Midday passed, and they continued their frantic prophesying until time for the evening sacrifice. But there was no response. No one answered. No one paid attention. We see here, and we're going to continue this in just a second, but I want to pause there because what we see, I want to give us a scenario here. Ahab is the king, and you might call him a lukewarm Christian. He understands who God is. He has a knowledge of this God, but he's married to this woman named Jezebel, and she is kind of running him, and behind the scenes, she's, you know, kind of telling him what to do. So she's got all these other false gods, all these other, idols that they're worshiping. And so all of the people have fallen into this same idol worship. And Elijah is calling them out. He's saying, I'm sick of this. We're not going to keep this up. Make a decision. Either you're going to follow God, or if you believe that Baal is God, then, hey, you're going to follow him. But we're not going to keep going back and forth. I don't have time for it. You're going to show up, and we're going to have a showdown. And he calls him out, and he says, here, matter of fact, I'll let you go first. I'll let you go first. Go ahead and set up your altar. Do what you got to do. Everybody, you know, put it on the wood there. And you call on your God. And we'll wait and see what his response is, and we'll compare that to the one true living God. And so they do this, and they call on the God, and then they start panicking, getting worried. And he taunts him. That's why I said it's hilarious to me. He's like, maybe he was busy. Maybe he was on the phone, right? Maybe you should call him back. Maybe, you know, he sent you the voicemail because he was asleep. Or maybe he was, what did he say? He was traveling. Maybe he was out of town. You know, maybe he had to run to the store. He's kind of in jest here, but he's saying, we know that this God isn't really a God at all. These idols that you're worshiping, they can't respond to you. They can't take care of you. They can't do anything for you. Why would you chase after this false God? And he is pointing this out to them. But more importantly, what we need to understand about this, if you know, and we know that we serve the one true living God, we shouldn't even tolerate, we shouldn't even concern ourselves with the false gods and the way that people chase after all these other things that are meaningless and pointless in life. Our faith must allow us to call out false Christianity that damages God's name. See, when we don't take a stand for the one true living God, it confuses people because that's where they were. There were people that were kind of divided, like, well, I understand that this God is living, and they know the story, and he brought us out of Egypt, and he's taking care of us, and he's given us all these victories. But these other people are worshiping these idols, and it seems to be working out for them too. See, what he's saying to Ahab, who's the king, who has the power and is in his control, he could do something about it. He's saying, not only am I telling this to the people, but I'm telling this to you. He's speaking truth to power in a way. He's saying, you're giving God a bad name. You're making it sound like there are other gods that are equivalent to him, and they're not. And we have to be willing as Christians to call a spade a spade. We have to be willing to call out the truth where it is. That doesn't mean, again, like with Babe Ruth, it doesn't mean you're arrogant and that you poke your chest out and you hold your nose up and you look down at other people. That's not what Christianity should be. It should be a simple reminder, just like we see here with Elijah, that this God is real. I can give you the evidence. I can show you how it's working in my life. The rest of this is fake. The rest of this is meaningless. And you call it what it is. We have to have that type of faith that is willing. Otherwise, people won't know what real Christianity is because everybody's running around here saying they're Christians. Everybody's saying they know who God is. And, yeah, I read the Bible. But Real Christianity is reflected in your faith. It's reflected in your life. It's reflected in your willingness to not compromise and allow other distractions, other idols, other things to take you away from your focus on Him. You know, standing alone, I saw this picture, made me think, you know, I Google a lot, and I was thinking, what does it mean to stand alone and be set apart? And very often, this is kind of, even though we probably don't walk around and see, what are these, Skittles or M&Ms or something, I'm sure we don't look at life this way, but this is kind of what it looks like in today's world for you to actually stand for something and be a Christian. For you to actually be a follower of Christ, this is kind of what it looks like. You will find yourself like this. I was telling you about the baseball team. Now, I love my baseball team, and I told them, I said, you know, and I let the, you know, the board know who brought me. I said, anytime I can help, whatever I can do, even if it's on a weekend, you know, I will do my best to try to be there, but I am not going to compromise on my convictions. You know, I'm not going to compromise on what it means for me to get together with the family of God and to worship. And that doesn't mean that if I were out of town, if something came up, that, you know, oh my goodness, I can't believe you're, you know, compromising on your relationship with God because you weren't there on Sunday. There are things that happen. But more importantly, these kids, these 14 and 15 and 16-year-old boys, what good is it if I coach them and I get them to the point where they're now able to go play in college or they can play in the minors or they're traveling, they're on these, you know, teams. But their own coach, their leader, the person that they're expecting to teach them is not willing to take a stand for God, which is what he says that he really does for his real job, that he says he's really committed to, and that is what his faith is built on. It means that you stand alone. It means that those parents, some of them think, well, is he really committed to us? Yeah, I'm committed to you until God calls, until I have to take a stand and make sure that my priorities are evident. You know, they lost a day. And in my mind, I'm like, man, I wonder if I had been there, would it have been different? And you know, and I care about that, but I don't care as much as I care about making sure that my faith in God comes first. My attitude towards God has to be that I'm willing to stand apart and stand alone, even if I'm going to be criticized for it. Yesterday, a situation happened with the team. We beat them, and you should have heard the way the parents were cussing at me and yelling at me. You would have actually thought I did something to them. I literally stood there on the third baseline with my back toward them. I wanted to make sure I didn't even address them because I didn't even want to be confused. They're literally cussing me, calling me names. I heard some racial stuff, and the thing about it was my response has to be one that is anchored in faith. I can't respond with the attitude of I want to get retaliation. Or this isn't right, I have to respond knowing that those parents, that my players, they're watching me. And they're not just watching me as their coach and their leader. They're watching me as the man of God. They're watching me and saying, I'm watching his faith. He prays with us before we go out there. He makes sure that before we take the field, we pray. Let's see if his faith is actually real. And we see, and I'm giving you that example, but guess what? Every last one of us has those same opportunities in our own life to have that same example. Do we have that same type of faith and that same type of conviction? Do we carry that out? It says here, I love this, stand up for what is right, even if it means standing alone. And there are going to be plenty of times that just like Elijah, you're going to have to stand alone. And keep in mind, standing alone is only meaning you might stand alone by yourself as a human being, but God is always there. You're standing with God, even if everybody else abandons you. Like he said, 450 of you prophets of Baal and just one of me. And he stood there by himself. And you notice some of the people who were just kind of watching, they're like, oh my goodness. I know this is a real God, but man, 450 to 1, those are some bad odds. You know, I'm sure if they were taking, you know, bets, it's like, I'm sure Elijah wasn't getting all the money on his side, right? Kind of like those, you know, boxing matches. It's like, you know, the money line was shifting, right? I mean, 450 to 1, And it's like, all you need is God. All you need is that one. Do we remember that? Do we think about that through our day-to-day lives, that all we need is the one, which is God, no matter what and how many other people have? We'll continue this, read through the rest of this particular chapter, chapter 18. Starting verse 30, it says, "Then Elijah said to all the people, 'Come here to me.' They came to him. And he repaired the altar of the Lord, which had been torn down. Elijah took 12 stones, one for each of the tribes descended from Jacob, to whom the word of the Lord had come, saying, 'Your name shall be Israel.' With the stones he built an altar in the name of the Lord, and he dug a trench around it, large enough to hold 2 seahs of seed. He arranged the wood, cut the bull into pieces, and laid it on the wood. Then he said to them, 'Fill 4 large jars with water and pour it on the offering and on the wood. Do it again,' he said, and they did it again. 'Do it a third time,' he ordered, and they did it a third time. The water ran down around the altar and even filled the trench. At the time of sacrifice, the prophet Elijah stepped forward and prayed, 'Lord, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, let it be known today that you are God in Israel and that I am your servant and have done all these things at your command. Answer me, Lord, answer me, so these people will know that you, Lord, are God and that you are turning their hearts back again.' Then the fire of the Lord fell and burned up the sacrifice, the wood, the stones, and the soil, and also licked up the water in the trench. When all the people saw this, they fell prostrate and cried, 'The Lord, he is God. The Lord, he is God.' Then Elijah commanded them, 'Seize the prophets of Baal. Don't let anyone get away.' They seized them, and Elijah had them brought down to the Kishon Valley and slaughtered there. And Elijah said to Ahab, 'Go, eat and drink, for there is a sound of a heavy rain.' So Ahab went off to eat and drink, but Elijah climbed to the top of Carmel, bent down to the ground, and put his face between his knees. 'Go and look toward the sea,' he told his servant, and he went up and looked. 'There is nothing there,' he said. 7 times Elijah said, 'Go back.' The 7th time the servant reported, 'A cloud as small as a man's hand is rising from the sea.' So Elijah said, 'Go and tell Ahab, hitch up your chariot and go down before the rain stops you.' Meanwhile, the sky grew black with clouds and wind rose. A heavy rain started falling, and Ahab rode off to Jezreel. The power of the Lord came on Elijah, and tucking his cloak into his belt, he ran ahead of Ahab all the way to Jezreel." We see here that his faith was not just talking in a bunch of words, but he was willing to go out and execute on behalf of God. We see here that, you notice where they did all the water? All that water. He's like, "No, keep putting more water on her. I don't want there to be any doubt that God is the reason for this victory. I'm going to burn everything up," right? He's like, I'm even going to, the water that was building up around the trench, we're even going to get rid of that. That can only be God. You know, it's not like, well, there's smoke and mirrors and there's a little trick here. Well, maybe it wasn't as much water as we thought. You know, it burned for a little while and it evaporated. No. This is clearly of God. In our lives, when God gives us a victory, when God does things, when he shows us things, and it's clearly of God, we have to be willing to stand on that and declare that. The confidence that we have, the faith that we have, is rooted in this same God. He says, okay, now we know who's who. Now it's clear who's the real one true living God. Not only are they wrong, but let's go ahead and get rid of this now. Let's just go ahead and just wipe them out. You know, in confidence and faith. And then he sends Ahab. Remember, Ahab's on the fence here. Ahab is not really living in faith. He knows, but he's cowering. He's the one that's allowing these false gods to be here. And he says, now let's go forward. Let's move forward in victory. We see this example here, and it's important that we apply this to ourselves because, as we talked about last week and the week before, we are to be just like these prophets. We are expected to go out into a world of people who don't know. They are just as confused. They are just as on the fence. We have to be that example of faith that shows them what it means to have one true living God on our side. We should be able to speak the truth in all situations. Speak truth to power. Go tell the king. I don't care if it's a king. I don't care who it is. Tell them the truth. Do it with faith. And we know that whatever that outcome is, that God is behind that outcome. See, Elijah was never confused about what was going to happen. That's why he could say, go ahead, do what you got to do. You know, call him again. You know, call his house phone, call his cell phone, call whatever you got to call, do whatever you got to do. I know what's going to happen. I know the outcome. I know my God is real. Do we have that attitude that says, I know my God is real, and I know what the outcome is going to be. I have faith in this outcome. I have faith that even if other people don't understand it, even if they don't believe in it, I can't be moved because I know who my God is. And this is so important because just like we see with Elijah, people can see it in you too. When you stand for something, when you hold on to your convictions, when you're willing to love somebody and everybody else is like, I can't believe they still respect it. I can't believe they still gave him a hug. I just can't believe that they allowed that to not be something that they punished. It's because I know who my God is. It's because I'm actually walking in the example of Christ. So I have the power within me to say, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. I have the power within me to say, you know what? That person, no matter what they did, what does he say? If you see someone who's thirsty, you see someone who's hungry, they need clothes, and you do it for them, that means you did it for me. I can have that attitude regardless of people because I have Christ. I have a faith that's not in some idol. It's not in my job. It's not in my marriage. It's not in my money. It's not in my appearance, in my possessions. My faith is in the same one who burnt down, who came down, brought that fire, who destroyed all those idols and destroyed all those prophets. The same God we're reading about here is the God who I entrust into my life, who guides me. So therefore, I can always speak the truth and be confident that God is with me. You know, just like I was talking about Babe Ruth, the same thing applies to Elijah. They're human beings. And everybody has something that they fear. Everybody has something that is a weakness for them. And we can look at all this power, we can look at all this greatness that is Elijah and his faith and how we should model his faith and how he went after the prophets of Baal. But what's so interesting about this that I really want us to think about here as we finish up is he just comes off of slaughtering all these prophets of Baal. He literally gets this amazing victory for God, but he's still a human being. He still has weaknesses, just like us. And it's important that we understand that just like we go out there in faith, we also have to bring our weaknesses, our shortcomings. We have to bring our temptations. We have to bring whatever it is that we are. We have to bring that to the Lord as well. Yeah, I use the word fear here because when we think about fear, even if it's not fear as like being afraid of the dark or monsters under your bed or something, we all have something. Because fear paralyzes us. It stops us. It makes us hesitate. It keeps us from being that bold, faithful person who goes out and speaks for God. You know, there's this cycle of fear you know, this acronym that I don't know who did it first, but it applies, you know, fear, false evidence appearing real. Very often, and, you know, interestingly enough, my dad, he made me read this one time. He actually, I believe, read it in The Art of the Deal, that book with Donald Trump, where it says, he was talking about real estate. He said, somewhere close to 90% of the things that we are afraid of, they never even happen. They actually don't exist. 90% of things we worry about and we get all concerned about and get caught up on, they never even happen, much less the outcomes that we expect. But fear is that doubt. It's that thing that creeps in the back of our mind that Satan wants us to listen to instead of listening to God. I love this. And even though I know it, and even though I've preached on it, and even though I understand exactly the context and what it means, sometimes we have to be reminded that fear is a liar. Fear is telling you not to trust God. Fear is telling you don't be bold because there are consequences for you being bold and trusting God. And even somebody like Elijah, well, I want to look at this last passage here because it speaks to this fear and what we have to guard our hearts against in much the same way. 1 Kings chapter 19, starting verse 1, it says, "Now Ahab told Jezebel everything Elijah had done and how he had killed all the prophets with the sword. So Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah to say, 'May the gods deal with me, be it ever so severely, if by this time tomorrow I do not make your life like that of one of them.' Elijah was afraid and ran for his life. When he came to Beersheba in Judah, he left his servant there while he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness. He came to a broom bush, sat down under it, and prayed that he might die. 'I've had enough, Lord,' he said. 'Take my life. I am no better than my ancestors.' Then he lay down under that bush and fell asleep. All at once, an angel touched him and said, 'Get up and eat.' He looked around, and there by his head was some baked bread over hot coals and a jar of water. He ate and drank and then lay down again. The angel of the Lord came back a second time and touched him and said, 'Get up and eat, for the journey is too much for you.' So he got up and ate and drank. Strengthened by that food, he traveled 40 days and 40 nights until he reached Horeb, the mountain of God. There he went into a cave and spent the night." You see this here, and the reason why I talk about fear, and I kind of want to look at this from two different perspectives, but we see this fear here. This man just got done slaughtering 450 prophets of Baal. He just had this amazing victory, and then suddenly Jezebel sends him a little message to intimidate him. And he's afraid. And, you know, you think about your own life. See, there's some of us who fear isn't some, you know, big, strong man coming to attack you. You might think, hey, man, you know, I'm a black belt. I can handle this, right? You may not be afraid of that. But the fear that we see here with Elijah wasn't some weak, scrawny man who didn't understand the power of God. The fear that came from Jezebel, some woman, wasn't even a physical intimidation. It wasn't a threat that she was going to actually put her hands on it. No, it was something far more subliminal, something in his mind, something far more subconscious. It's kind of like you may not be afraid of that strong man who's coming to attack you, but the thing that actually causes you to fear are those voices in the back of your head saying, you know what, you're going to fail again. You messed up in the past. You can't do it. You tried it before and it didn't work. You're never going to be able to find happiness. You know, you go into that job interview and you believe and you've prayed about it and you have faith. And then that voice, like Jezebel, comes along and says, you're not going to get that job. it didn't work out for you last time. They're going to deny your disability again. You're going to go into the doctor, and I know you've been doing everything you need to do to get your health better, but you're going to go in there, and they're going to do your blood work again, and the tests are going to come back the same. That's the fear. That's the doubt. To the point where, after hearing this, he went from this amazing victory to, you know what? God, this is too much. I just want to die. That's that fragile confidence. We believe, and then the things from our past, the words of somebody who loves us that might tear us down, we begin to listen to those words. We begin to listen to those people instead of listening to God. Instead of everything that God is doing and showing you, you're listening to those other voices. And we have to ask ourselves, are we going to listen to those Jezebel, whatever that Jezebel is, are we going to listen to those Jezebels in our life that are going to stop us from being faithful? Or are we going to listen to God? Oftentimes, our weak faith can be cured simply by tuning out those other voices that are not of God. And just another point of note, that I want to focus on here, and it's so simple sometimes. You notice where he's going through all of this, and he's worried. He's hysterical. He wants to die. He's running away. He left his servant. Said he ran a day off into the woods. Like, he left everybody. Like, God, just kill me now. And you know what the solution was? Boy, just sit down and eat something. Just eat something. Sometimes you just need to take care of yourself and sit down and eat. Very often, we look for these deep insights, and we'll read books, and we'll try to figure out all the ways in which we can overcome this fear, this anxiety, these hurts. And the answer is, just sit down and eat. Just sit down and take it. You're not rested. You're anxious. You're frustrated. You're thinking through all these scenarios, and they're never even going to happen. Jezebel did nothing. It was a threat. It was an idle threat, like we talked about this morning in Sunday school. It was a test to see whether or not he was actually going to be faithful or whether he was going to give up. Sometimes when that mother-in-law says something to you, this, I disapprove of the way you're acting towards my wife or my husband, sometimes that's just a test. Sometimes when your boss at work or somebody is doing something and it frustrates you, sometimes when your neighbor says, I'm going to complain, I'm going to tell the authorities that you're not doing this, you're not cutting your grass, whatever it is, it's a test to see if you're going to overcome that fear with your faith. I haven't forgotten about Mark. Mark comes up here and he led a song today. Here's the thing. Mark, I mean, he's pretty much bigger than everybody else in here, right? Mark's not afraid of anything. Here's the thing. He's also not like a trained vocalist. He's not going to, you know, go sing in a concert or anything. The point is, sometimes we are afraid. And we have to be willing to step in the face of our fear and say, you know what, I'm just going to do it. Because for some, we're thinking, well, it's not that big a deal. I mean, it's just singing a song. You just stand there, you start it off, and everybody kind of just joins in. But here's the thing. How many times during the course of a day do we look at something that we are not comfortable with? We're not full of courage with this situation, and we just need to do it. You just need to do it because it's for God, because you know it's right. We have to look at our fears and be willing to step up to the plate and call our shot. I'm doing this for God, and I know I'm going to get this victory for him. That's why I smiled through that whole song, because I'm thinking to myself, Mark don't want to do this. You don't want to come here and do this. But he did it. That needs to be our attitude for everything in life. I need to overcome this. I've been avoiding this person. I've been avoiding this situation. I've been avoiding opening this mail. I've been avoiding returning this phone call. I've been avoiding. I'm running away. I'm running off into the woods. God, I'd rather die than open this mail and call these tax people back. Whatever it is. I would rather die than face it. And God's like, just open the mail. Just pick up the phone and call them. Start a conversation. The things that you are afraid of are never even going to happen. Most likely they probably even forgotten about it. But you, it's not even about the situation. It's about you overcoming your fear. I want to close with a few things really quickly here, some questions. Number one, do I speak truth in all situations with the expectation that God will protect me? Does my faith give me the necessary courage? And I bring this up because oftentimes we think, well, how do I overcome my fear? How do I deal with courage? How do I build up my courage? And we will literally read books and books and all these seven steps to overcome. There's all kinds of books out there. And sometimes it's just, you know what? God is going to order my steps. And I have faith and I believe that. I'm going to allow God to take control of this situation. And it is simply that. It's not any more complicated than that. Do I speak the truth in these situations? Do I shy away because I'm afraid I might get retaliation, I might get some blowback, it may be a problem? Or do I say, no, I'm going to stand on my conviction and speak the truth because it matters that since I'm a man or a woman of God, it matters that I always tell the truth and I speak the truth, regardless of what other people might think and regardless if I feel outnumbered. Number two, who is the Jezebel in my life? What voices cause me to fear and shrink back from the purpose God has called me to? And this is so important because a lot of times it's not a lack of talent or a lack of skill or a lack of knowledge. It's not that we're lacking anything, but we have those voices in our head. We have those people in our lives who they're going to say, you can't do it. You shouldn't do it. Why would you put yourself in that situation? We know better, but we're listening to those doubts. We're listening to other voices, be it another person, be it a past failure, be it a failed relationship. It could be anything. We're listening to that instead of listening to the voice of God who's saying, I wouldn't send you out there for you to fail. Who is that Jezebel? What is that situation? What is that Jezebel that's speaking the doubt into your life that's causing you to be faithless and live by fear? What part of your life do you need to revisit, recover, and insert God into the situation? Do you operate on God's timing in every season of your life? You know, I say to revisit and recover because very often, you know, when we look at this, in particular in chapter 18, as Elijah is calling them out, he's saying, look, we need to look at this situation. We haven't been faithful to God. You can't serve God and serve the Baals. What situation in your life have you had that divided interest? And yeah, I know who God is, but I'm kind of like Ahab. I haven't really had a complete devotion to God. I've kind of been, even though we don't call it this in 2019, I've kind of been worshiping some other things that are not of God. What areas of your life do you need to revisit and insert God into the situation and allow things to be done on his time? You know, I bring up the timing part because, you know, there's a lot. I'm sure Elijah, this wasn't the first time he was mad about the prophets of Baal. But this was the time for him to call them out. And, you know, there are times when you may see a situation, see a person, know a thing, and yet there comes a time, there comes a moment where you have to stand for God, where you have to declare that I'm going to be focused on God. When that time comes, when those situations are revealed to you, are you willing to insert God into that situation? And finally, are the issues I'm facing simply a matter of me taking better care to deal with them head on? You know, it was a simple, you know, all that fear that was and that anxiety that was overcoming Elijah, it was really as simple as you just need to sit down and eat. Sometimes you need to go home and take a bath. You know, sometimes you need to just turn the TV off, turn the radio off, turn the CD off, and just sit in silence and take 5 minutes to allow yourself to recover. He was a mighty great man, but he was so stressed out because of the fear that was going on in his mind. Do you take care of that? And in some situations, it's as simple as, you know what? I'm just going to take some time with me and God. You know, it says Elijah ran off into the woods by himself, ran off for an hour. But he just needed to sit down and listen to God. Maybe you're in that situation today. Maybe you've never even said, you know what? I'm going to make it a priority. I'm going to make God the focus of my life. Maybe you're in that place where you're like, I have gotten distracted. I have lost sight of what it is that God is telling me, and I'm listening to all these other things that are worrying me and consuming me, and they've got me afraid to where I can't be at peace. The only way to know that peace is through your relationship with God, is through having a relationship with God. That's the only way to know that peace. Do you have that peace? Do you need that peace? That's what the church is supposed to be for. That's what we are here for, is to help each other, to help people who need to find that peace, who need to find that relationship with God, so that we're not living by fear, so that we're not running away. God's giving us opportunity after opportunity after opportunity to serve him and be victorious, but we're running away. If you're running away from God, don't keep running. Don't leave here in a state where you're still in fear, you're still uncertain. If you don't know who God is, if you've never accepted Christ, if you've never become his true follower, we're getting ready to stand up and sing here in just a second. Come forward. As a church, we will pray with you. We will pray for you. We will teach you. We will show you what it means to be at peace with God and to have a relationship with him, and that you can help others find him and demonstrate that through your faith. If you're someone who's weak in your faith and you're struggling and you are in fear, don't walk away from here in fear. Get the help that you need. Let us pray for you. Let us pray with you. But each and every one of us has to look at our lives and say, what is it that is keeping us from being bold and declaring, like Elijah, declaring our life and declaring the things that are God's for him? If you would like the prayers of the church, if you would like to come to him and know what it means to really be a follower of his, please stand as we sing our song of invitation. Come forward.